Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Several things to discuss this afternoon, as always. Olympics beginning tonight and challenges in Rio. I think that it's unfortunate that we have a celebration of the world and in this really a challenged area, and the things that seem to be happening there are very difficult and an expensive game, of course, the Olympics that just cost the city billions. Is this something that's really a good move? Will they recoup that, right? That's a question. We'll talk about that a little bit. Also, a conservative blogger, popular conservative blogger, who seems to be challenging evangelicals in a way that I personally don't see a reason to. I don't understand why we have to pick fights with our evangelical brothers and sisters. This guy doesn't present himself as a quote-unquote Catholic blogger, but he's a Catholic guy who's a conservative blogger, right? So, but basically, talking about the heresy of Joel Osteen, I think there are better ways to express our energies than to pick on those who should be on our side. We'll get into all of that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back into this.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. 50 minutes every afternoon, and follow me over on Facebook. You'll find the things we talk about on the show over there. Now, I was thumbing through some things on Facebook. I saw this, and I thought, it caught my eye. But I'm a tried and true Ford guy. I have been sold since owning a Ford Explorer since the past 2 years that this is my automobile. I found my car, right? I found my loyalty, and I will not be swayed. But it is tempting. Tempting when I see this Jeep pickup truck that's coming out in 2017. There's something, it's pretty cool, right? We haven't seen a Jeep pickup in a long time. And to see this Comanche-like pickup coming back, something pretty fun about it. I will not be swayed, just so you know. Tried and true Ford. My next vehicle ideally is a vintage F-150 and not a Jeep pickup truck, but my goodness, it's pretty cool. For car enthusiasts, it's you can dig through that one. I didn't repost this on my Facebook page, but neat stuff. So I mentioned this as we started the show. I know that we've got a lot of followers of Matt Walsh and his I at least appreciate his humor. I like the fact that he'll bring in a lot of kind of tongue-in-cheekness, and he's generally, while he's making a solid point, or at least a conservative point, if that's your political leaning, he does it with kind of a lightheartedness generally, and I appreciate that. But I don't know what it is about Joel Osteen that seems to have gotten him so ticked off, but he's picking fights with this guy, and I don't understand this. And I don't understand it because I would hope, as Catholics, as evangelicals, as people of faith, and really as people, right? I want this to be a people thing, not just a faith thing. But it's got to start with people of faith, and it's leading me to what our Holy Father said recently. If the first thing we do is just criticize someone's stances and call them a heretic, we're probably not going to make a lot of inroads there. Now, I don't know that that's Walsh's intent. Apparently, it's not. And as I posted on my Facebook page and asked the question, is this evangelization? And Deacon Tim Weinman, thank you for responding, basically saying, well, it's not intended to be. I get what he's saying. But I have to say this. A Catholic friend suggested, just made a suggestion that I listen to some Joel Osteen. So, and I never had. I was familiar with him, of course. How could you not be? But I'd never spent any time really listening to his message or hearing him preach. So I did. I'm upon that recommendation. I went out to YouTube and I randomly chose one of the sermons out of the thousands that are there. And I spent 20 or 30 minutes or 40 minutes, however, maybe 40 minutes. And that might be more along the lines of the length of his sermons. It's not like the Catholic Church. It's not 5 minutes or God forbid, 12 minutes. Quite a lengthy message. And as I was listening, and I was waiting, I was waiting for that, okay, when will the shoe drop? When will it be that I can't agree with this anymore? When will I be convinced that this is something that is antithetical? Waiting. And I went through the entire thing, and I thought, you know what? This is inspirational. It is truly inspirational. Now, that may be because I entered the church, not with a capital C, but came back to my faith through an evangelical community, through a couple of evangelical communities, and I value that. And I think that there is a... There can be a progression. I don't think that everyone is ready for a full-blown Catholic experience. And as I've said before, I've tried to make Mass this introduction. And I even have friends who've been to Mass repeatedly, and they still haven't necessarily gotten to this point of connection. Because I think that's why we have RCIA, right? Hopefully we present a compelling proposition. As Catholics, a compelling proposition that says, wow, there's something very interesting about this religion, about this faith walk, about this philosophy that is appealing. And if we do that, and if we show that there's something compelling about this, then it could be the opportunity for others to check it out and then enter the process. But just simply going to Mass, you're probably not going to have this, wow, where has this been all my life? Experience, which I did entering the evangelical church the first time. I did not at all. The first time I went to Mass, I didn't think that was not my reaction. My reaction was quite the contrary. It was, what is this? What is this? I don't even know what's going on. I'm just confused. But certainly, I believe that if someone's first experience is a Joel Osteen message, and they happen to hear Scripture clearly intimated in the message, which it was in my experience, and maybe I'm not well-versed enough because I've only done this one time of sitting through a sermon, but to simply say that it's all this heretical, name it, claim it, prosperity gospel, I didn't see that. Again, I sat through it. I'm like, well, I know the Scripture passage he's talking about. I understand it very well. But the message I got was this amazing faith. And isn't that what we want? Isn't that what we all should have as followers of Christ? Should we not have an expectant faith? This was his message. His message was about the hemorrhaging woman and the fact that Jesus walked through this crowd with others who weren't healed, but she was. She was because she had such an expectant faith, such an audacious faith, that she dared reach for him. She dared reach out and touch him. And as a result of that, it changed her life in ways that it didn't change the lives of the others who were in the multitudes. That's a message we all need to hear, right? We need to have such an expectant, such an audacious faith that we're willing to reach out. Not just wait for grace to come, but to participate in the grace because we are striving to touch even the hem of Christ's garment. How can you decry that message? How can you say, how dare that heretic? Right? I mean, really? So I think Walsh's treatment of this is really unfair. At the very least unfair, ungrounded as well. And I just don't think that we need to bring more division between us as Catholics and our evangelical brothers and sisters, with whom we agree more than we disagree if we really look at things. Now, Pope Francis had an interesting thing to say. This was more about secularization, but I think we can apply. It's universally applicable. We can use it anywhere, and that is that, you know, how we're going to do this effectively, how we're going to conquer, if you will, secularism. He says it's by outloving the secularists. We have the grace, we have the ability to love with deeper depths, with greater and more appealing openness than anyone else, because there's nothing for us to be threatened by in this dynamic. And if we do that, if we really do that, and it looks like, my goodness, as Scripture says, we should be seen and recognized by the way we love one another, if that's what we do, it's going to be seen as such. You can't disguise that. You can't, nor can you fake that. It's going to be something that others will see, and they're darn well should be a marvel at that. It should be that, wow, right? This is impressive. These guys got something going on here. If we do that, God willing, others will be attracted to us. We should not have to call others out on something that we disagree with. We should not have to impose ourselves into areas where we don't belong, but simply by living and expressing a true desire to be charitable in every possible way, amazing things can happen. But I fear, and again, Walsh does not, he doesn't classify himself as a Catholic blogger. He talks about his faith at times, as he did in this. but I just think that there's more harm than good done by something of this nature, and really, really unnecessary in the grand scheme of things. So, goodness. I want to talk a little bit about the challenges that we see in Rio. We know that certainly with World Youth Day there a few years ago, I think a completely different situation than we see happening in the Olympics now. And we'll get into that in just a moment. More to come. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. Redbox Media, now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our Friend of the Show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the Show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media. Good afternoon. We are are back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture Current Events Hour, Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. And was responding to this post I put over on, I actually stole it from Mark Shea. And I think anything that I can steal from Mark Shea is worth stealing, because Mark Shea usually puts out really good stuff. And this was one of them. And it's the award for the least self-aware tweet of the year goes to Planned Parenthood, saying, add babies to the list of people the real Donald Trump would kick out of his campaign rallies. And it's from Planned Parenthood. So, goodness, right? And, of course, a little bit back and forth here, but one of my friends talking about the percentage of the business that Planned Parenthood claims is abortion-related, which, yes, they claim a very small percentage. He says 12%. I'm not sure. I've heard them say 10%. But they like to tout that it's a very small amount of their actual business that is abortion-related. Now, what the problem is with that is that the way they do their math, the way they do their accounting, as it's been told by certainly those like Abby Johnson, who was formerly a Planned Parenthood worker, and others who I have heard confirm this, they will say, okay, 9 free contraception distributions today and 1 abortion. Well, there's 10% of our business that was abortion-related. So it's really a numbers game. It's creative accounting. It's however you want to look at it. But the fact remains that Planned Parenthood is the number one largest provider of abortions in the U.S. That's unquestionable. And the other interesting fact is they show a profit annually of almost exactly what their tax subsidy is, which makes no sense. Why do you need to profit at $500 million a year and still get tax support? What if you just broke even and you paid everybody the exorbitant salaries that you do and you never took a dime? Because that's the argument, right? Well, if Planned Parenthood loses its tax support, it can't do what it does. Well, not according to their books. Their books say they're profiting by $500 million a year. So we could remove that and they would be fine. They would not go anywhere. They just would break even instead of having a profit. But they aren't a for-profit business. They are a supplier of women's services, right? So what are they trying to do here? So for me, there's a lot of challenges. There are numerous challenges in this equation, and it's not just because I have a problem with their abortion business. Now, I was asked the question recently on Facebook in one of these discussions I got into, if it wasn't for the abortion, would I be okay with the taxpayer support? And I think I said abortion to me is the issue. But I have a problem with anybody getting taxpayer support when they don't need it. But granted, if we remove the abortions, then their profit center would be gone. At which point I would say, well, if they're really going to provide services to women, health services to women, maybe they do need support for that. So it's unfortunate that the wool is over the eyes of many. And this is where we are in this, that we think that, and I mean, goodness, right? I was in that pool at one time. I was right there. Planned Parenthood, well, what's bad about those guys? Aren't they helping Planned Parents, helping parents plan? I mean, really, I didn't realize what they were about. So, cleverly named for a reason. They went from the National Birth Control League or the American Birth Control League to Planned Parenthood for a reason, right? It's easier to not know what the heck they're all about. If your name's got birth control in it, well, you're probably about controlling births. If your name's got Planning Parenthood, by the way, I'm there to help Planned Parenthood. That's what they're doing, helping parents plan appropriately to be parents, right? That's part of what they do. So, yes, that's over on my Facebook page. If you want to chime in on that discussion, you can certainly do that there. So the Olympics opening ceremony tonight, Rio, with just a number of challenges, unfortunately, with a tanking economy there, a president under impeachment proceedings, and I think it's $13 billion. Is that what I saw? $13 billion. Does that make sense? $13 billion price tag. You know, an invoice on this Olympic extravaganza in the billions. So we hope that this would be an economic boost to them. And as they were beginning to have challenges a few years ago, you know, we had a Rio World Youth Day, which was promising that this would bring about an economic boost to them. And now an Olympic Games that's saying, hey, look at this. This is another amazing thing in this South American city. And unfortunately, whether it's the leadership, the management, the wherewithal governmentally, it's not materializing. And actually, it's obviously going in the other direction. Now, you may have a beautiful area with tremendous natural resources and all of the things that are there, but it's simply not, doesn't look like it's made a difference. It's made the impact that it could have made these two events back to back. And I think more than anything, probably been a greater drain on that local economy than they imagined. So it's unfortunate that we could look at, it's not just Zika, right? Zika is the big scare. Everybody's worried about Zika, which is everywhere. Which, by the way, I saw this CNN Live is now, you know, this is their new thing. They put out the reporter with a live stream, and it just sits there for like an hour, and it's just them talking and catching interviews and this and that. And they did this yesterday from a particular neighborhood in Miami, saying this neighborhood has been quarantined and no one is allowed to come in unless they live here because of Zika. Now, how do you do that, right? If we've got Zika in Miami, it's everywhere because it's a mosquito that he's not going to say, oh, I'm sorry, am I not supposed to leave? Are you asking me to stay here? That's what I need to do because I'm a Zika-carrying mosquito. Forgive me. I was about to go down the street, but if I need to be here, right? I mean, how the heck does that work? Can't really train the mosquitoes to stay put. They really don't have an effective means of combating. They're working on apparently trying to put another creature in the mosquito's environment that could potentially handle this, and now there is a proposed vaccine that may not be materializing for another 2 years. And the thing about this is that we don't even know at this point how devastating this disease might be, because it certainly seems as though it has a longevity. It's not something that just comes and goes, it's gone, and okay, all is good. But that men infected may have no symptoms, none whatsoever, but then carry this in their bloodstream, which is going to translate into the pregnancies, the future pregnancies, that could end with this challenging birth defect. So it's a very bizarre, at best, challenge that we've got, one that is really difficult, one that's almost, I think, impossible until there's a vaccine. And even then, vaccines come with other challenges, but we hope that this is something that can be eradicated. But until then, what do you do? I'm not sure you can simply say, stay out of Zika infested areas. My wife and I took a cruise, thanks to her business paying for the cruise back in the early spring, and we couldn't go to Jamaica. We went to Jamaica. We couldn't go to one of the islands that we were supposed to stop at because of the scare, right? So we had to cruise on past because we couldn't have Zika mosquitoes. But it's beyond that at this point. And there's not really a solution until, like I say, there's some sort of vaccine or some way to eradicate this. But what happens in the meantime? And what happens if we do find out that this is, the longevity of this challenge is much greater than anyone thought initially, which seems to have been confirmed at this point? What does that really look like? It's something that at this point is nothing but speculation, but challenge. So all of this to say, my goodness, we got to pray for Rio, the people of Rio, and not only them, but anyone affected by the Zika thing, but especially as these Olympics take off, we pray for a turnaround, right? We pray that this could be it, but unfortunately, it seems like Olympics generally just put a strain on a local economy, and then they end up with an abandoned area that was all built up for the Olympics, and what do you do with that after the Olympics are gone? It's it may seem like a blessing, but maybe more of a curse to be asked to host. More to come back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back at this.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, Current Events Hour, Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Posted a video over my Facebook page of the funeral of Father Jacques Hamel. And the fact that both Catholics and Muslims have been flocking there as a way to pay respects to the saint. And I think it's easy to not know that, to not see that, to ignore that. And I hear that a lot. I hear that so far too often and so unfortunately too often that, well, we're Muslims speaking out against this. We're Muslims, blah, blah, blah. And as I've said many times, please understand, first and foremost, the number one victim of extremism globally are other Muslims. It's not Christians. And then to see when Muslims show up in support of those who are victimized, they show up in condemnation of violent acts, it's as if the media simply ignores and says, we didn't see that. Where is that? That didn't happen. What are you talking about? So the video is there. If you want to see the evidence, you can take a look at that. Moving and beautiful that we see something of this nature bringing two faith traditions together in this fashion. Another video on the life of Mother Teresa. Finally, we're seeing the canonization. I think many of us have been waiting for that. I had hoped that we would see some degree of maybe even a dual canonization between Mother Teresa and St. John Paul II. That didn't happen. That's okay. They both need their special experiences independently. But because of the connection that those two had from their contemporary experiences, I thought that there may be something fitting about that. But nonetheless, in September, we will see Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta canonized as a saint. And yeah, it's especially moving for me personally, having been a young messed up rock radio guy back in the day who always followed events even before the instant access of what we could find now through all of the media outlets out there. But she was a prominent public figure and often making news, winning the Nobel Peace Prize and addressing heads of state, and always with just an amazing degree of attraction. There was something just so beautifully attractive about her, and I can never understand it. Again, I've said this before many times, seeing her being attracted to her message and her humility and her simplicity. I didn't know she was Catholic. That part didn't even, like, oh, this is a, I'm seeing Catholicism, right? I didn't know that I was witnessing Catholic identity. I had no idea. All I knew what I was witnessing was something that I thought, man, this woman is the real deal. That's what I thought. All I knew that I was seeing was authenticity. And not just authenticity, not just who she really was, but a heart of charity, just a heart of love. That's all I knew. I knew nothing more. But to see her in and knowing what she did, being fully aware of her actions, and then to see her with the challenges that she would issue forth and the way she would present herself and just the humility of this woman, I was just blown away. I didn't know. I didn't know that this was, as I see it now, you can say, well, Leo, you're kind of stretching that, but I see everything in this supernatural arrangement of elements that came together to lead me to the Catholic Church. I did not know that the seeds of Catholicism were being planted at that time through this wonderful woman. I had no idea. Again, all I knew was, my goodness, what an amazing soul. I really thought that. And it's not like looking, because, I mean, you know, if all you're looking at is authenticity, if you're just simply saying, well, that's impressive, it's not, because there are people who seem to be authentic because they say things that nobody else is saying, or they shoot from the hip, or they have the guts to speak out. That's that brashness. It's really not authenticity. Because if you take the word of what it is and you really take it back to the author presenting something authentic, now that presupposes an understanding that there has to be something grace-filled in that authenticity. And it's not simply about somebody just letting it all hang out, right? Generally, that's not authentic. Right. Generally, that's a front. If that's what you're presenting because you got to look like the tough guy, it's probably because you haven't really ever embraced what is truly authentic there. It's kind of like Pope Francis has said this. I know that I'm paraphrasing badly, but essentially he said, you know, if we would be who God created us to be, just that, just simply that, if we would be who God created us to be, that in and of itself would be world-changing. That's what she did, right? She was who God created her to be. And now we are very close to recognizing that in its fullest fruition, which is canonizing her as a saint. So I think that I think the saints, I've always thought this, I think the saints are there for us all to go, wow, okay, it's doable. We may think it's not doable. There may be times we're so ridiculously tempted and we're ready to give in and we're ready to throw in the towel and we're ready to say, oh my goodness, is it worth this? Do I really have the fortitude? I ask myself that. Do I really have the fortitude? Because I'm really tempted to give in, right? I can easily suffer from that temptation. But then to see those who have done it and done it well, suffered well, even in doubt. I mean, read her diaries. Faith is not about always being certain. That's not faith. Where's faith there? That's a fabricated confidence. I'm certain of blah, 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 whatever. That's kind of your own ego being inflated. No, we can say, well, God willing, I'm going to trust that this is going to happen. I'm confident that God can make it so. If I'm willing to cooperate with that grace, if I'm willing to do my part, back to the Joel Osteen, you know, if I have that faith, if I have that kind of confidence of faith that I'm going to reach through the crowd and I'm going to insist that I touch the hem of Christ's garment, even if that's all I can touch, I'm going to reach out. I'm going to do that as faithfully as I possibly can. I'm going to strive through the others who may be expectant in their faith, but they're not willing to reach out. I mean, Jesus is pretty clear that there's a lot of conditional elements. If you love me, you will keep my commandments. If you love me, you will feed my sheep. So we kind of got to realize that it's not just all guarantees. It's not just all, hell yeah, yeah, you're good to go. What's he even say? He says to some, in this Matthew 25 narrative of the sheep and the goats, that there are those who say, well, when did we see you? And he says, you saw me. You just ignored me. And even those who have called out demons and those who have healed in his name, those who have dined with him, no guarantees. Because it really comes down to that insistence on hanging on and reaching out, grabbing his garment and saying, I'm gonna get this. I need this. You got to get it. You got to get it to me. I know it's the only way this is going to work is if you get it to me. It's a Jacobian, I call it, that wrestling, that insistence that, no, you are going to bless me. You're going to bless me. Right? And it's not in this type of arrogance, like, you're going to bless me and I'm still going to do my own thing. No, you're going to bless me, Jesus, and I am going to do this. Through the thick and thin, through the tough stuff, through all of the temptation, through everything I'm plagued by, whatever, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to insist upon it. I'm going to insist upon it. Now, you may think that that sounds like some sort of prosperity gospel, or you may think it's some sort of health and wealth. No, it's just fighting through your faith and insisting on it. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Have a great weekend. Back on Monday afternoon. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless you.